British Prime Minister announced sanctions yesterday, didn't he? Against three individuals and five Russian banks. There were concerns this didn't go far enough, and certainly the leader of the Lib Dems, Sir Ed Davey, came onto this very show to say exactly that. Foreigns made it clear this morning that more could be imposed if Russia launches a full invasion of Ukraine. Those five banks will have their assets frozen, as will the three Russians, who will also be subject to a travel ban. But how does this work in practice? If you're an oligarch, what does having sanctions imposed upon you actually mean? Well, I'm very pleased to say that we have Maya Lester with us, Maya Lester QC, a barrister at Brick Court Chambers and specialises in sanctions. Now, she runs a website called European Sanctions. Maya, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now, interestingly, speaking to people yesterday, and looking at Putin's kind of inner circle and how wealthy he is, of course, and they are, I was asking really what effect sanctions will have on certain Russian individuals. What effect do you think they will have, Maya?
Well, of course, at the moment, so first of all, just to explain, there has been a list of individuals connected with Russia who have been on what's called the targeted sanctions list since 2014. So that was originally EU and then sort of became a UK list after Brexit.
Right. And that had no effect on what happened in the Crimea, did it?
Well, I suppose you could argue about whether Putin would have gone further in 2014.
Oh, yes,
but look, and people do argue about that. But looking at the current situation, the government now has the legal power, which it didn't have then, to sanction people, not just because they are directly involved in undermining Ukraine's territorial integrity, which is the phrase they always use, but also if they are benefiting from or supporting the government of Russia, and that includes being involved in key strategic industries. So in other words, they've now got the power to add far more people in a wider category, i.e. people, you could colloquially say, close to Putin, than they did before. Now, so far, as you say, all they've done is added a few people with indications that there might be more to follow. So in terms of, you know, turning to your question of what does that actually mean for those individuals who are added, it means that in the UK, if it's UK sanctions we're talking about, all of their funds and economic resources are frozen. That means they can't do anything with their money in the UK. And it makes it a criminal offence for anyone to provide them with money or do anything with their money, i.e. disturb that asset freeze. So that means banks, financial institutions and others can't deal at all with the funds of those people. And as you rightly said, there's a travel ban, meaning they can't travel here either.
Right. So in what ways, though, because very wealthy people have, as the Pandora Papers show and various other leaks, ways of channeling money in different ways?
Well, I mean, the first point is these are only UK sanctions.
Quite.
So that is why there's such an attempt to try to join up thinking between the US, Canada, Australia, the European Union and the UK to try to make these as worldwide as possible. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the UK sanctions are just UK sanctions. EU sanctions are EU sanctions. So these are not worldwide provisions. That doesn't stop these people using their funds in Russia. It would. I mean, there are some effects. So, for example, UK nationals would not be able to deal with their funds in Russia because the legal restrictions bite on UK persons. But you're absolutely right. This is not a total restriction on what they can do with their funds. And I think there's another important point, which is more than any other sanctions I've ever seen, these have been flagged up publicly. And that seems to be a sort of purposeful policy of all of the sanctions actors, that they've been, as it were, warning President Putin what might happen. And that no doubt has caused people who fall within the various categories that the government is allowed to sanction to do whatever they want with their funds. So no doubt they've been taking advice and making sure that it impinges on their assets as little as possible.
They're legally able to freeze them. Is the government legally able to take them?
No, they're not. So there are various other powers. I mean, if, you know, the UK has a huge amount of powers in relation to what's colloquially called dirty money. They have unexplained wealth orders where they can require people who are extremely rich to explain why they have their funds. They can, of course, go after money that they can show is the proceeds of crime. And in those cases, I mean, there's no problem with taking funds away that have been criminally obtained, but sanctions don't do that. And one of the big debates in this area is, you know, should the government be using those other white collar crime tools in its armory more than it has done when it comes to Russian money in the United Kingdom of that kind. But sanctions, you're right, just freeze rather than seize.
In order to go further, it would get very, very complicated indeed, wouldn't it? And the government would need to throw considerable resources towards that.
Well, so the government has indicated that it will go further if Putin goes further. So what do we mean by that? So first of all, there's always the possibility of adding other people to the list. In a way, that's the easiest thing they can do. So more people are subject to the sanctions that we've been talking about. And of course, there's now the power to make those people who are connected with the government. But there are also other things they can do and indeed have been doing, but could do far more stringently since 2014. And that is not these lists of people and companies, but it's what they call sectoral sanctions. So restrictions that don't just apply to a list of people, but across the board. So these are restrictions on Russian state-owned banks accessing sovereign, accessing capital markets, restrictions on Russian sovereign debt, export control on whole categories of goods that can't be exported, all sorts of things that the US has been talking about and the EU and UK. So yes, it's complicated, but there's a really long menu of things that could happen. You can argue about how effective they are, but the UK has certainly indicated that this is just phase one.
Roman Abramovich's name has come up a number of times. And we, of course, won't go into his specifics about him, but he is subject to a travel ban, not sanctions. But if the government were to go further and to look at wider assets in the UK, could Chelsea Football Club potentially fall under that definition?
Well, Roman Abramovich's name was wrongly, I think, indeed, raised yesterday as having been subject to sanctions. Yeah. Exactly. He's not subject to sanctions. But let's just say somebody who... So the first point is the government has to go through a legal process to get someone on the sanctions list. That requires them to be satisfied that there are reasonable grounds to suspect that the person comes within the various legal headings, one of which is benefiting from or supporting the Russian government. So who knows whether, as regards a particular individual, that evidential sort of legal threshold would be met. They also have to be satisfied that it would be appropriate, given the purpose of the regime, to list someone. So assuming that somebody ticked all those boxes and the government thought it was appropriate to add them, then the question is, what effect does that have? And if they did own, you know, assets, resources, clubs, that does mean that any transaction that might be benefiting that person, any resources or funds going to that person, would have to be licensed, i.e. you can't do it unless you have the specific permission of the Treasury. So I wouldn't go into any details on that person that you mentioned, but certainly it's very complicated where they hold significant assets in the jurisdiction doing the sanctioning.
How effective are sanctions, Maya, if done unilaterally?
I think it depends on two things. One, what you mean by effective. So sometimes sanctions done unilaterally can be done with the purpose of sending a very strong signal that we, the sanctioning jurisdiction, just disapprove of this behaviour. In the case of current Russia sanctions and the debate about it, the sanctions are trying to do something really quite ambitious, which is actually change the policy of a very powerful nation and the leader of a very powerful nation. Now, that is a big ask of sanctions. And so, you know, you can debate whether, you know, any different tool of foreign policy is going to achieve that. But I think, you know, the narrower answer to your question is unilateral sanctions, so sanctions just imposed by the UK, how effective they are will depend on does the person who's actually sanctioned have assets in the UK, because some may not. Do they want to travel to the UK or do they not care? And if the purpose of the sanctions is to impose pressure on Russia, on President Putin, does President Putin care if that person suffers and is seriously inconvenienced by the imposition of sanctions? And all of these are questions that no doubt those in government and governments across the world are having to think about at the moment.
Maya, what is an example of some of the toughest sanctions that the UK government could impose? Because presumably there are different levels.
Yes. Well, there used to be entire trade embargoes on countries where they just more or less said you may not trade with that country. And sanctions on Iran are probably the example of the toughest sanctions that we've known in recent times. Not a full trade embargo, but we basically cut off banking. And we at that point was the European Union and the US, cut off banking relationships completely between Iranian banks from having any correspondent banking relationships in the UK, EU, US, and basically the US stopped Iran from being able to engage in dollar transactions at all without great complexity. Now, that sort of very comprehensive sanction can be done. There would need to be extra legal powers to do it, but you could attempt to, as it were, freeze out the whole Russian economy insofar as that's possible. Now, of course, sanctions of that extremity are criticized because they have an enormous impact on those in a country who have nothing to do with government policy. They're very, very punitive, and you would have to be asking the question, even that, would a leader of a country who's sufficiently determined be deterred from what they want to do by the fact that their people are suffering economically? It's very difficult to tell. And that's why I think using sanctions to actually change the whole policy of a powerful country is a difficult thing to do. I'm not saying it's impossible. Luckily, I'm only a lawyer, so I don't have to make these kinds of decisions, but I'm aware it's difficult.
What effect could this have on the London economy? After all, there are millions of pounds sloshing around in London from oligarchs.
Well, so at the moment, we don't have listings of oligarchs, so or very few people in that category. So we're talking about sort of what could happen. I think it's undoubtedly true, given the amount of Russian investment in the UK, that any business with a Russian exposure is going to have to look very carefully at, do these particular sanctions impact on it? Does it need to do its business differently? Does it even need to exit the Russian market altogether? And there are businesses who will certainly suffer themselves in the UK as a result of these sanctions. And that is always an aspect of sanctions, which is why, for example, the impact on energy prices of Germany saying we'll halt Nord Stream 2, that will have an impact undoubtedly on energy prices in the European Union. Is that a cost worth paying? And that is always the balance that has to be struck.
Western governments gave Russia enough notice that they were going to impose sanctions if Vladimir Putin did what he's done so far. At that point, presumably, the Russians would be clever enough to know, and probably don't even have to be that clever, to work out the banks that were going to be targeted and the individuals who were going to be targeted, thus giving them enough time to move their money elsewhere.
Well, as I've said before, it's definitely the case that these sanctions have been flagged in advance more than many. I think that was a positive policy decision to do so. And you're quite right, in the case of some who might be said to be obvious targets, I think that's a very valid point. They will have been given an opportunity to move their funds. On the other hand, if you're a business, doing perfectly legitimate business, which involves Russia, I suspect that many, if they could, would have taken the opportunity to have a look at their business and see what might be affected. But obviously, it's difficult if you're massively invested in an area that's subject to sanctions. It doesn't mean that your investment automatically has to end. But I think it definitely means complicated business decisions for many.
Please excuse me asking you to be reductive here, but it's kind of part of my job. Overall, this is all that is being talked about at the moment, sanctions. In your experience, have you seen where a government has changed its policy based on sanctions that are imposed on it in recent times?
Well, as I say, lawyers probably not the best people to comment on that. I do think it's very difficult. I think the best example that's given of where sanctions, in inverted commas, worked probably is Iran, that we were talking about earlier and the Iran nuclear deal, those were very, very far-reaching sanctions. They had a massive impact on the Russian economy, so great that you could say there were one factor that led to the election of a more reforming leader and Iran coming to the negotiating table. So
one factor.
I suspect one factor.
One factor. But at the moment, sanctions are the only factor that is being suggested and put forward.
Well, you could say there's been an attempt at diplomacy as well. You know, sanctions used to be an adjunct to war. So you used to have war with sort of trade blockades at the same time.
That's right.
In more recent times, it's, you know, sanctions are used along with diplomacy as a way of trying to avoid troops on the ground. So, you know, you could say they are always worth a try because they are less, they have less cost than, you know, costing lives. But, you know, whether they can actually have the effect that they are intended to have is very, very difficult.
Maya, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Maya Lester, QC, barrister at Brick Court Chambers, who specialises in sanctions. Thank you. Now,